Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Happy Valley United, the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. For more info, go to happyvalleyunited.com.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by HVU Insider. I am Jim Galante. With me, the leader of HVU Insider, and that's Mike Villagrana. Mike, how are we doing, sir?
Oh, we're doing good. Just another week in July. This is the boring time of the year. Thank God for the World Cup, because I've been all over that. That's been really exciting. And I'm not a soccer fan. I think I'm, you know, my son plays it, my daughter plays it, but, you know, I don't really watch it until, you know, the World Cup is on. And man, it's been awesome watching them. This is the time of year. It's just boring. People are looking for things to talk about. So it's really good that the World Cup has been around to kind of take up that time that is usually, you know, it's talking time. You got the Big Ten meetings coming up pretty soon. And then next thing you know, we're going to be in camp. And then we're going to be talking about that home opener on the 4th. So it's an exciting time. These weeks fly by. They honestly do. Like, even my wife's like, she's like, what are you doing today? I was like, I got the show. I got the show. She's like, oh, again? I was like,
every week. Come on, tell your wife you got to spend time with Jim. It's interesting. Yeah. You talk about the World Cup. It fascinates me, the psychology of sports. It's kind of like the Olympics happens every 4 years. I mean, do you ever watch a track competition during any time other than the Olympics or any of those other sports? No, zero interest. That's the way that the World Cup, I don't care about soccer, but I think it's a great sport for kids. I think it's fantastic. But once the World Cup happens, you do have an interest. And it's funny, I'm most interested, of course, in the USA team. And when they lost, like when the goalie comes way out of the goal and has the ball, all he has to do, kick the stinking ball. I know nothing about soccer, but I know it was a major screw up. It's like, come on, buddy. It's not that difficult. If Jim knows this, you certainly do.
Yeah. And
I also love, like, the controversy. Was it England and Norway that the kick hit the wire, or they think it did, or not sure if they did, and it led to a goal? And that kind of controversy, I know the first instinct is that shouldn't happen. It should be cleaned up. But the fact is, it's those controversies that bring attention to the sport.
Yeah. You know what is really interesting to me now that I have a 7 and 11-year-old is – just youth sports, right? And how it's changed from when we grew up. You know, after the U.S. lost, they, you know, all the people are coming out saying, you know, why aren't we, you know, doing better, right? And a lot of people have been going back to, well, it's the youth systems, right? And like, they get talent. This is really fascinating to me is, you know, it's such a big sport, you know, over there. And instead of like, it just seems like we have this like travel ball system, right? In all of the youth sports, and you see it coming up a lot about people saying it's costing a ton of money just to play sports, right? In youth, right? And that's an issue, right? Especially in these times with inflation and, you know, all of that, right? And but their youth sports, they like they pay them, or they got a kid that's 11, 10 year old that's like kind of special or decent, then they'll ship him off to like an academy. Like it's just way different over there. The way that they treat, the way that they develop the young players in soccer, and I just think that's just really interesting culturally. But and also it bugs me because, you know, I'm an old man now, and I just think about how youth sports was when I grew up, and I loved it, and it was awesome. You know, my mom didn't have to, you know, work three jobs to, you know, just get me, you know, to camp or, you know, travel all over the place. But so that kind of stinks when I see that or I hear that. But my son wanted to do or he made this team, this travel team, right, for soccer. But we would have to go to Pittsburgh like all the time just to play a game. How are you doing that? He's 11 years old. You can play rec league, or you can go play in the – there's a park right around the corner where I live. So, yeah, it's just really interesting.
I am fascinated by that also, how it works. And I'm also fascinated by how people are saying, gee, now with this enthusiasm for the World Cup in this country, for the U.S. team, maybe this will be like that tipping point where kids will play the, you know, in the youth sports, it'll end up being the national team will be better because of this development. The problem is, what was it, 94 that they played the World Cup here previously? Yeah. The conversation was identical, Mike. That was exactly what everyone said back then. I think the problem is, where are the best athletes? And, you know, nothing against those American players, but when you start to see a guy like, and again, I know he's a different kind of athlete, LeBron James. But LeBron James isn't playing soccer, you know? He's playing basketball, or he could have been a phenomenal football player. I think our very best are playing the other sports. They're, you know, they're playing football, they're playing baseball, they're playing basketball.
Yeah, to me, it's the same story with boxing, right?
Yes.
Like, growing up, boxing in our day, like, that was the top sport. That was up there, top three sport, right? Especially like the Mike Tyson days, and, you know, going to the most recent, you know, the Floyd Mayweather days and all that. But like those boxers, like, they're playing other sports, especially the heavyweight division, which is, that's the division that everybody loves, right? The middleweight and heavyweight division. And those guys are playing football or something else, or basketball, or like some other sport. They're not boxing. So yeah, it's the same thing. Like, we just have other sports that are bigger here that our better athletes are going to go to. So I think that's where we'll be at for a while. I don't see us being like a premium soccer team ever, really, to be honest, with all the other because of all the other sports we have going on that are really important to this country.
Well, it's interesting you brought up boxing, and I know we're supposed to be talking about college football, but this fascinates me, and boxing is a great example. Like, I don't know if I can name a current boxer, okay? And back in the day, you know, you mentioned Mike Tyson, who was a generational kind of character beyond boxing. Everyone knew who he was. I don't know if it may be before your time. There was a time when we had some Marvin Hagler, Sugar Ray Leonard, Wilfredo Benitez, and they were all in this near same weight classes. Yeah. And they were all so good, and it was a major thing if any of them were fighting each other. Now, does anyone even pay attention to boxing anymore? And I'm not sure exactly why not. I guess it's, you know, like UFC fighting now has kind of taken over.
Yeah, I try to watch, but it's really not out there too, which sucks. But like, from where I'm from, it was a pretty big deal, boxing. Like, you know, and Ray Boom Boom Mancini's from there, if you remember him. Killed a guy.
Oh, yeah. Ring.
And then my time, like my generation, was Kelly Pavlik, the middleweight division. When he beat Jermaine Taylor, like, and he got knocked down, he got back up, and then he ended up knocking out Jermaine Taylor. That was like one of the best sports moments in my life. And it was funny. I was just hearing a show, and they were talking about a guy from Youngstown, and they started going talking about Kelly Pavlik, which was really cool. But yeah, that boxing's awesome. Even back in when I was in high school, they used to have a tournament every year, where it's anybody in the area, high school ages, and they box, and it was a huge deal. It lasted about a month, and it was awesome. But you don't have that stuff anymore. You know, it's just different times. Maybe it'll come back. You know, it's going to take like a generational guy probably again, and I think they're always looking for it. But then even when they do get a generational person through the ranks, like, they screw that up because there's all these different divisions, and you know, then they baby them, and then they won't fight. That's the thing, is like, back in the day, all these fighters, they fought the best of the best. They weren't worried
about
the record so much. And they were still getting paid out really well. So you just don't have that anymore.
Well, if as a boxing fan, if you want to have go watch some tapes that you'll enjoy, Marvin Hagler. Just trust me, Mike. Go find some videos of his fights. I think it was against I'm trying to remember the one fight he had. It was one of the greatest fights. It lasted about three rounds. Just look up Marvin Hagler, Tommy Hearns. That was it.
Yeah.
Tommy Hearns and Marvin Hagler. Look that up, Mike, and just watch the whole fight straight through. I think it only lasted about three or four rounds, and it was all action all the time from start to finish. And it was so exciting. And I know there's probably listeners out there probably saying to those two guys, those two idiots actually enjoy this violent sport where two guys go and beat the hell out of each other. And that's the goal of it. But it was a fantastic sport. And I think partly that's why we don't see as much boxing, not as many kids get into it, you know, as they did years ago. It was a different time, but it was also in the Olympics back in my day, back to even when I was very young, boxing was such a huge part of the Olympic coverage. And the Americans did really well.
I don't like how they score in the Olympics. That's the only thing that bugs me. It's different. It's way different. But yeah, I agree. For what reason, the name Spadafora popped up in my mind because I remember liking him. He was a Pittsburgh kid, and I remember the chain tattoo he had, and he was a stud. But yeah, in my region, that Pittsburgh Youngstown region, it was a big boxing area, at least when I grew up.
Well, and I ended up living in Philadelphia for a number of years. Philadelphia boxing also had a great legacy there, you know, Joe Frazier and all that. And if you watched any of the Rocky movies, of course, you know, so much boxing was based there. But anyway, well, I'll tell you what, Mike, we ended up killing a whole quarter on our distraction. We started with the World Cup soccer. Somehow segued to boxing, but I promise what we're going to do when we come back, there's still a lot of recruiting news going on. We had a lot come out in the past week, a lot of concerns for Penn State fans. I'm going to let you talk us off the ledge, Mike. We'll do that when we come back.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform, providing exclusive recruiting intel. The first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike V, empowered by Penn State students. It's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free. Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Happy Valley United, the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student athletes at Penn State. For more info, go to happyvalleyunited.com.
Hello, welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Mike Villagrana. I'm Jim Galante. Our show is brought to you by HVU Insider. Mike happens to be the guy in charge of HVU Insider. A little later, I'll give Mike a chance to tell us all about what's going on there. After we were done with our boxing segment, Mike, let's turn over to football. You mentioned at the start, this is kind of the quiet time, except for recruiting. Now, I have a little bit of a theory about recruiting and why we as fans kind of go crazy over it is we don't have games to talk about. So recruiting is our only way to experience wins and losses, Mike.
No. It's a good and the bad thing about this time of the year in the recruiting cycles, because you don't really have much to talk about. So whatever there is to talk about, it's kind of magnified, right? And then just in these days where, you know, with social media and everything, that's just a whole nother element that magnifies it even more. whether it's good or bad. But to me, I always refer the cycles like a hamster wheel, right? Every year it's the same thing, right? You go through waves of, you know, you pick up a really highly touted recruit. Everybody's excited. You know, everybody, you know, you hear we're back, or, you know, we're going to be so good. And then, or something happens, like we lose a recruit, and then it's the world's ending. Right. And then the season comes and you win a game and everybody's excited. We're back. And then you lose a game and, oh, we're the worst. And then it's the waves of college football. And specifically when it comes to recruiting, it's just, you got to go through the waves. And the way that you go through them will really kind of say a lot at the end of a recruiting cycle, because I think it's really important for staffs to kind of go through these, even the highs, you know, you don't celebrate, you know, everything like you just won the Super Bowl. You just got to kind of keep a mild temper when you go through these waves, the good and the bad. And then just know the end goal, and you're always working to have the end goal be a really good recruiting class. And so regardless of like where we're at right now, we're sitting really good to have a good recruiting class for the 27 class specifically, which I've said on record before is, you know, I think we're going to have a good season. I think we're going to finish the 27 class really well, whether that's the top 20, 15, top 10. I think it will be in that realm of a top 20 class. And with a combination of a good season, I think that will motivate we'll have momentum, going into the 28 class. And we already have, two big 28 commits in this class. So it sucks when, you know, you get hit with, some bad news, you get a decommitment. But it's part of it. It's part of the recruiting, especially now with the, I always say, back to the Derek Hoosier statement, the last 10% of recruiting is the player compensation part, right? And so that changes kids and families and people's decisions. And that's just the way it is. It's actually a business decision sometimes. What I don't like is like the assumption that like you hear that, oh, well, we're getting outpaid. Like that's a lazy take, because there's so many variables, and I talk about it all the time. Every recruit is unique in the recruitment, and there's so many different check boxes that need checked off for each recruit and what's important to each recruit. And then on the other side of it, each school has a budget and can't go out of whack for one recruit, right? Or one roster position, right? Because then that will mess up your entire roster and the way that you built it. So like when you say outpaid, like that's just a lazy take, in my opinion, because there's so many different variables, like I already said, that go into each recruitment, right? When I hear that stuff, it's like, it must be July. We're bored. I get it. Everybody knows, I've talked about how I've been doing this for, 10 plus years. So I kind of become a little desensitized to it, because it's the same thing every year. Every year you're going to go through a recruiting cycle. You're going to have ups and downs, right? But the main objective is to have a good class at the end of the year, right, and have a good season. And we're both and both things are lined up to happen this year for us. So I guess fall camp come soon enough, right? So we can start talking about depth chart, some, position competitions and, the good stuff.
Well, you know what, Mike, I'll give you a heads up, some warning, and I'm sorry, I messed myself up here. Okay, there we go. Sorry about that. A little technical glitch on my part, self-inflicted. But first of all, two things. First of all, I'm going to disappoint you here today, because I am going to talk about that money aspect of it. Okay. And also, I'll warn you and our listeners, I'm going to be a hypocrite, okay? I'm going to play both sides of the discussion. And I've determined that it's the difference between my heart and my head, okay? The heart, the emotion part of it, I get devastated by, like I said, their losses in recruiting. And then I try to think about it. What does it really mean? So first of all, let's talk about the couple losses that happened last week. Let's start with Khalil Taylor, wide receiver, state of Pennsylvania, four-star. And again, understanding that Penn State fans have a little PTSD when it comes to the wide receiver room. So it felt like, gee, already a couple, you know, Jameer Dean decommitted. There was the kid who from Alabama, who Penn State was a finalist, ended up going to Auburn. So it's like, okay, this is the last chance to get on the board with a top-level wide receiver, and Khalil Taylor ends up going to Nebraska. And I think part of what hurt there, too, for fans is, boy, it's one thing to lose a player to Georgia or Alabama, but to Nebraska, which feels like a lesser program, Mike.
Yeah, and I think with fans and how that's kind of received, it's a little different just because he's been in the fold for so long, right? He was already a commitment, and then he decommitted after the change. And then, you know, he's back on campus with Coach Campbell and new staff. So it's different with him because people are more emotionally attached to him, you know, PA kid, all that. So I get like the disappointment in that. But me, half glass full, optimistic. I've talked about this even before he did commit to Nebraska. I think we're going to have a really good season. I think come that USC game, I think we're going to start hearing rumblings of a lot of these decommits or these guys that maybe we missed out on coming back on campus. So the game's not over. The Khalil Taylor, that's disappointing. You want the PA kid, a guy that we've had a relationship for a long time, to stay home. And I would look at it like this thing ain't over. So the thing I don't like is like when people get negative, like especially on social media, and unfortunately with my job, I have to be on social media.
Yeah.
But I'm not a big social media guy because it's just very divisive and very, you know, toxic. But like fan bases that come at like kids, like it's just, what's that doing? Like, especially they didn't sign, right? And like look long term, like the game's not over. We still have the season to play, right? He's in PA, right? So, and it's just, there's a lot that could still happen. So I wouldn't get too frustrated on that. But know that, you know, there's so many different things too that we can go off of this. So if we don't get Khalil Taylor, there's all obviously, you know, the portal that I've talked about. If, you know, you got to reevaluate the room after the season, what young bucks have developed, you know, who are you going to be able to count on for the next season? And then look at if any, you have any holes or gaps, then you'll go to the portal probably and try to pick the receiver that fits. But yeah, the whole thing, but back to like the social media part and like people attacking recruits, doesn't make sense. Because what if you do want him? What if he did want to come back? He's going to remember, man, that fan base kind of turned on me. Like you don't want that. And I'm not talking about Penn State fans. I'm talking about just in general, recruiting on social media. You see that a lot. And you just like, even if he does, say Khalil goes to Nebraska. Well, what if he wants to go in the portal eventually one day? Right. Like you want to have still a good relationship with that kid and him feel good about that fan base rather than attacking, you know, a kid because he chose another school. But I know that's tough. That's easy for me to say just because I've been in this game. I've become a little desensitized by it. But I get it as a fan, you get emotionally attached to this. But it's part of why it makes it fun, the game. Right. It's so volatile. You're going to go through so many waves. That's why it's fun. That's why, you know, a lot of people have jobs because of recruiting, because it's fun. You never know what to expect. But yeah, long term, long game, you know, we're still going to be in it with some of these guys.
Well, we're going to hit on some of the reasons why I think that us fans who get emotional about losing a recruit. Now, part of the thing with Khalil Taylor, of course, was the announcement with the hat thing, you know, putting on the Penn State hat and then throwing it aside. And it's the, and I know folks will say, well, they're just kids, and they are, but I think it's incumbent upon the adults who are around these kids to help them out and say, you know what, these little things you do that you've done, you know, among your friends for years that are cute, everything you do now, you're a national entity. Everything you do is now filmed, and as you, it's on social media. You've got to also be careful as players what you do.
Yeah, I mean, it's part of their branding, right? So, yep. And ever more is that important now, right, in this day and age with NIL, that you're a brand. That type of stuff, like, you saw a ton of it back in the day. It was basically every commitment. You saw it was some kind of hat flip or something goofy like that. So you don't see as much of that anymore, but I think you're right. I think the people, you know, around these kids can, you know, help them out, you know, do it the right way. I'm not a big fan of it, but, you know, well, I think most kids regret doing those type of things.
Yep. I think so too. We'll talk more about it right after this break.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform, providing exclusive recruiting intel. The first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike B and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free. Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Happy Valley United, the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. For more info, go to happyvalleyunited.com.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by HVU Insider. He's Mike Villagrana, Executive Director of HVU. I'm Jim Galante. It's quarter number three of our show. I had teased this last segment, Mike, and you and I, we talked before we started recording. Over at HVU, you've got a boatload of things going on, don't you?
Yeah, you know, we have the HVU Insider platform that we're continuing to, you know, work on and evolve. It's a really neat initiative that we started a couple months ago. You know, we have over 7,000 signups, which is awesome. Really appreciate everybody's support on that. But we're continuing to evolve that with our sweepstakes. We just put out a worn jersey auction. So all you have to do is sign up. You get a couple points just for signing up, and then you can use those points to enter to win those that jersey. And so that's something we're going to do every month, have monthly sweepstakes. It's just a fun way to interact. There's also polls on there. There's all kinds of like games on there. It's like a gamification deal. Something really cool that I'm excited about is we're rolling out the 814 Club. So what the 814 Club is, it's just bringing back Letterman and combining that with fan engagement and using the platform for that. So just did an interview with Adam Taliaferro and A-Rob, Allen Robinson last week. So that will be coming out this week as we roll that out officially. But it's going to be something where we bring in the Lettermen that want to be part of the 814 Club, and then monthly we'll roll out some type of fan engagement. And that may be, you know, it may be a message board, ask me anything, like we did with Adam Taliaferro, which was pretty cool. Me and him got on there and you could ask us anything. And there were some pretty cool questions to Adam, especially when you talk to these guys, because one of the funniest things to talk to them about is NIL, right? And like what they would be worth and all that. What was their recruitment like? And, you know, talking to them on Friday, one of the coolest things about this is, you know, we're talking about, you know, these commitments and, you know, recruiting. Well, these guys helped build and sustain what Penn State is to this day, right? And so they can interact with the fans, and they can interact with these recruits, and these recruits and these fans can see what really the recruits can see what it takes to be a Penn State player, what they did to build up Penn State and help Penn State to be what it is today. And just talking to them, like, obviously I didn't go to Penn State, but listening to them talk is just awesome, really rewarding, just to me as a fan, because, you know, it's just their stories. Like A-Rob talking about, you know, him being a Michigan guy, and him talking about that catch against Michigan and how that went down, like, it was awesome. And that's going to come out in the interview. Obviously, Adam Taliaferro has an unbelievable story, and it's pretty cool, especially those two guys, because both are super successful, right? But in their own right, right? Like A-Rob, very successful in the NFL. Now he's kind of in the second phase of his life. And then Adam Taliaferro, very successful political lawyer. Like that's what I want the recruits to see. And they want to be able to bring that to the recruits and also to the fans. So that's what we're going to be doing, rolling out this week, along with other things that we got going on. You know, we're going to be rolling out a couple events, smaller events with some alumni chapters around the country, especially, you know, our region around here. That's going to be exciting. It's just this platform is about giving back, being a win-win for fans, for recruits, lettermans, us, just guys that love football. It's been pretty cool to see it evolve, because honestly, this thing just started as a message board thought with the last staff, and now it's turned into this whole thing. And ultimately, you know, these subscribers were able to sell, you know, our shows, our sponsors, and all that. And that goes back to the NIL bucket. And that's a win for us, right? So, you know, by supporting HBU Insider, you're supporting Penn State Athletics, just not football, but the overall athletic teams.
And you could go to happyvalleyunited.com and check out everything there that you need to know. Let's get back to, we were talking about some of the losses in recruiting last week. We talked about Khalil Taylor. And just one last thought, you know, you mentioned, Mike, about the fans. Hey, remember, these are kids who he may be available before he even commits to Nebraska. He may be available a year later, you know, so as fans, don't burn bridges for Penn State. My advice to the kids is also don't burn bridges on your side, you know, with that hat thing. Don't cause yourself problems.
I'd agree with that. I tell you what, though, it being an in-conference deal too, like that kind of creates a storyline in itself, you know, in the future with fans, which, you know, fans can have fun with. So, we'll see how that plays out. That one specifically. We'll see how that plays out.
Everyone has long memories. The other loss was Aiden Gibson. And before you even respond, I'm going to play both sides of this, Mike. One is Aiden Gibson first commits to Penn State, was not that very highly ranked recruit. Although I remember months and months ago, Mike, you talked about this kid and you were really high on him. His ranking among recruits has really skyrocketed, became much more in demand after he had committed to Penn State. So this is where Penn State fans, I think, sometimes get it wrong. Gee, now that he becomes in demand, it becomes a bidding war. Somebody comes in and financially steals him away. But I think what also was involved in him going to Rutgers was this reclassifying, which instead of coming in the 27 class, he's coming in the current 26 class. He will literally be on the field for Rutgers come this September when he should be a high school senior. And I imagine he's got a whole lot better chance of getting on the field as a freshman at Rutgers. So that's an attraction to him. And for Rutgers, you know, he is their most highly regarded recruit, highest ranked recruit in this year's class. He would have been the highest ranked recruit if he waited till 27 in Rutgers. He's of more value to Rutgers than he is to Penn State. But the fact that he's reclassifying, in my mind, he's got such a better chance of getting on the field at Rutgers, does he not, this first year?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's it's another thing where this one's different to me. Like the whole, like you mentioned, the reclassification, that has to be very appealing to the kid. You know, him to be able to come in right away and play. To me, it's not a great match, though. I just don't see too many kids from South Carolina go to Rutgers and, you know, have successful careers. Not that he won't, but because I think he's very talented. Like you said, we kind of I thought he was going to be a highly touted kid. At the end of the day, he ended up being, you know, a four-star, a high recruit because he's an all-around back. He's a, you know, he's an every down back, and he also has really good hands. So it makes him versatile in the passing game, screen game, stuff like that. And he's a big kid. You know, I think he's getting bigger right now. So that one sucks, but man, like him to be able to go play, like that's gotta be really appealing, but it stinks that it's happening at this point of the season, right? Of the cycle. Like yeah. You would have thought that this would have been in the works a while ago, and maybe it was, but you know, the communication there, I don't know what happened on maybe both sides, but I did read something, a quote from him saying that he always knew he was going there. So maybe there were some maturity things that kind of came up, and, you know, the staff needed a pivot and say, okay, that's fine. But there's a lot of things that we don't know that went into these and probably won't ever know, but there's usually some kind of thing, some, you know, silver lining behind this, him going to Rutgers. But yeah, it stinks that he's going to Rutgers. I really liked him. But you also got to think, too, if you're a running back, and we already have two. He was one of the two in this class. So we already have one in this class. And we also have a pretty deep running back room right now, right? And I know we're going to see what happens with Peoples and Q. And see how that happened or how they develop. But yeah, we'll see what happens. But I we're still in a good position from a roster standpoint when it comes to the running back position.
I'm going to talk to you more about that. But I think this is also a situation where maybe I'm putting two and two together, Mike, and ending up with five. But I think there's something to be said for the value of a player is different school to school. At Penn State, and we'll examine this a little more, the depth at the running back position right now at Penn State, but at Rutgers, from, you know, Rutgers standpoint, they may be able to, even if they don't blatantly come out and promise it, they could say, hey, look, here's the depth chart at running back. Kid, you got a chance to get on the field day one, and they can pay him from day one like a starting running back if the plan is to make him a starting running back right away. At Penn State, where there's, you know, a three deep there ahead of him right now, he would come in, if he reclassified, came to Penn State, he'd be at best a number four running back, even number five. And Penn State, I don't think Rutgers could pay the guy as a number one running back because of his value, more so than Penn State could, as, you know, he'd be starting out as a number four running back, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I think you're seeing this. This is a part of the parity that we're seeing in college football. This is why you're seeing other teams. This is why everybody wants the 24-team playoff, right? Because there's more parity. There's more teams that are, you know, that you don't have the Alabamas that are three deep with NFL players anymore, right? You saw this happen with West Virginia last year, or this past with one of our corners, right? They were able to make him the number one guy, right? So he goes there, right? Aiden Gibson, they're able to make him their number one guy, financially or whatever happened there, and they were able to get him in, so he's playing right away. Like that makes them better, right? We're still going to be fine. But that does get them better. It gets West Virginia a little bit better from where they're at. So it just brings parity into the game, which I kind of like. But obviously, I don't like seeing us lose players. But I'm just looking kind of 30,000 feet with these kind of things that happen, which is good for college football.
I'm in agreement. And I think that's where, you know, fans have to look at this logically, like we just did. Now, you've talked about the depth at those positions. We're going to talk about that, Mike, when we come back.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike V, empowered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free. Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Happy Valley United, the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student athletes at Penn State. For more info, go to happyvalleyunited.com.
Hello, and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by HVU Insider. It's quarter number four of our show. He's Mike, I'm Jim. We're talking Penn State football, specifically about the recruiting. A couple recruiting losses last week. Just one last note on the running back situation. I think it's at least a little ironic. Penn State had two running backs. It's the one from South Carolina who ends up decommitting and going to Rutgers, not the kid from New Jersey who's still committed to Penn State. But, Mike, I said when we started talking about these recruiting losses, there's a big difference between how I'm looking at this with my heart and with my head. And as much as it's a loss, you know, you look for the W's and L's, it's just recruiting. The difference at any of these positions, we're putting that emotional loss of Khalil Taylor and Aiden Gibson. But let's take a look at those position groups. And let's start at running back, Mike. And I think this may make fans feel better. It made me feel better about these recruiting losses, because especially with that fifth year of eligibility players now have, if you look at that running back room, Quentin Martin is coming back. He's got 3 years eligibility left. James Peoples has 3 years eligibility left. Carson Henson has 2 years. So does Cam Wallace. And we're not even talking about, you know, running back recruits coming back in. So, yeah. And I realize that these players might excel and might end up going to the NFL sooner rather than later, you know, maybe not filling out playing for their whole eligibility span. But losing one running back does not really change the entire outlook of the running back room.
No, but that's the fun in this, right? That's why fans and everybody loves it. This the class that we're signing right now, right? We're not going to get a return on them this season, right? You're not getting your return on investment right away. Right. So the actually declaring it, whether this class is a win or loss, it really doesn't happen until, you know, year two or three, when the guys are actually in the program. How have they developed? Are they playing? You know what I mean? Like, so that the most immediate win loss thing that we should be worried about is September 4th in the game. Right. Well, it's going to all work out, because that's the season, like I keep saying, is our. It's the biggest trump card in recruiting, right? Like, you win, that's the best recruiting tool that you can have. And we're in a great position where we have a new staff, we have a new scheme on both sides of the ball, and that's going to prove to you know, some of these recruits, I like this offense, man. I like the way they run the ball. And I like the way that they air it out. Man, that defense plays loose. Like you have this season, right, to win some of these recruiting battles as we enter the season coming up.
You do, and you often remind me of that. And your point, in fact, to show you the effect you have on me, Mike, one of our other shows, Andy Shea is on, and we were talking about the recruiting process. And he said, hey, look, this is a whole new staff coming in this first year. He didn't say you could throw it away, but it was kind of like, you know what? It's going to take time. He says, don't start judging this group until like December or January. That's the real starting point. And I said, no, I think October 10th is the starting point, which, if I have the dates correct, that's the day they play USC in what we presume will be the whiteout game. And Mike, it's been 10, 15 years where at least you hear players when they are asked, what was the difference maker to make you decide to go to Penn State? The answer, more often than not, is, well, that night I was here for the whiteout game.
Yeah.
That made me realize this is where I belong.
Yeah. And let me go back to, you know, I was talking about the A14 club that we were starting. You know, we just did an interview with Allen Robinson and Talaferro. The funny thing, they both talked about it. It's like, you know, A-Rob's talking about, man, I played in all of these NFL stadiums. I've been, you know, I played at a high level at a bunch of stadiums. Nothing ever compares to playing in Beaver Stadium, not just the whiteout game, but just in general. Nothing beats playing in that stadium, that atmosphere, once you walk through that tunnel. It's a huge recruiting tool for us. But also, that's another nice thing with the A14 club that we're starting, because recruits can hear that. Hear that from a guy that, you know, played 10 plus years in the league, like that's pretty powerful. But yeah, you're right. I've never been in another stadium that wows me like Beaver Stadium. I talked about it with those guys, and I've talked to you about it. I've been at other places that kind of are very proud of their traditions and their atmospheres, but they just never even come close. I would say probably a night game at Texas A&M would be impressive. I've been there for a day game, but that place is massive. Kind of like how Beaver Stadium is. It's just very daunting, especially now with that new West End. I don't know if you saw it, but it's freaking high.
It's
getting louder in there now. And then the other one was Tennessee. I was able to take my son to that Alabama Tennessee game a couple of years ago when they won. One of the guys that I work with is the DFO there now, so we were able to kind of take that in. But that was impressive too. But still, and that was a night game, and they beat Alabama.
Yeah.
And I mean, we were on. Yeah, it was crazy. But still, doesn't compare to Beaver Stadium. It's just something about it, man. And everybody that you talk to, the players that played it, it's the same thing. Just nothing really compares to it.
Well, it's such a recruiting tool. And what's nice about it, I think, is fans who go there, and you could experience it as a fan. Okay. So it may be, it's not the same as running out onto the field, but if you are in the stands for a whiteout game as a fan, you know what the players are talking about, what the recruits are talking about with that experience, because you're experiencing it also. You're experiencing the noise, the whole place just echoing inside. You get to experience that, which I think is a very cool thing for fans. Now, the other position, we talked about running back and the guys who are in pretty good shape. You know what? This group is not in too bad a shape also at wide receiver. Guys like Brent Eskelson, again, because of this fifth year, he played as a true freshman. Yeah. Do you realize he's got 3 years of eligibility left now, Mike?
I know.
Kobe Howard has 4 years left. They're talking, you know, up Amarian Jackson, you know, the freshman. He's got 5 years. We had Zay Robinson at one of our events, who a lot of people are excited about. He's still got 4 years remaining. With, you know, with that many guys, and by the way, Landon Bloom, who's the recruit, he's the wide receiver recruit, who's also a four-star recruit. So he's got 5 years of eligibility coming up. So I don't know. You'd rather – I'm not saying the loss of Khalil Taylor means nothing. It means something. But it doesn't mean everything, Mike.
No. I mean – the other thing too about the wide receiver room is that there's a lot of people that, you know, transferred in. And so like a lot of us fans, we really don't know what to expect out of that room. I know from what I've seen so far, they're long, they're tall, fast, athletic. That entire room is going to look completely different this year when people see them. Like I was telling you, I was around the guys a couple weeks ago for some like signage stuff, and, you know, I've seen all the guys come through. It's like, man, our receivers are long and big. So I want to say like all of them, Zay is probably the smallest one, you know, Zay from a height standpoint, but he's so fast and he's got a chance to be really good and he's young. It's going to be really interesting to see that room evolve this year and kind of fans get to know that room. And because I think it's really talented, we just don't know how talented it is just because it's all new.
I think the takeaway from it is to not get, it's fun to follow recruiting. It's fun to have the wins and the losses like we talked about, but don't get too caught up in it either way. Okay. One win isn't going to change things much. One loss is not going to change things much because there's too many players. And oh, by the way, this whole thing called the transfer portal, there's a good chance the current class, which has about 25 or 20 some recruits, there's a good chance half of them will never play a down at Penn State because they end up transferring. And oh, by the way, every year there'll be portal guys coming in, replacing them. So as we've always, as fans, because we enjoy the game so much, we follow recruiting. I think the words of wisdom are how you started things out with, don't get too high, don't get too low with the losses either.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, what matters is, you know, wins and losses, right, on the field.
Yeah.
And that's all that matters, right? So, like I said, I think we're going to have a really good year. Everybody's going to be really excited coming into this year with all the new things. It's funny because I go back to just my experiences and, you know, I was always in charge of what we call like the scholarship grid. And it's basically your entire roster eligibility. It's everything on there. And you update it as you get commitments or decommitments. And I remember going to Mississippi State with Joe Moorhead. And I remember that first cycle that we were a part of, Joe recruited his butt off, man. And but he really pushed for commitments in the spring, even though like they weren't like totally ready to commit probably, but it was really good optically, get them in the boat. But then you look at that scholarship grid from spring to when we actually had signing day, it was completely different, And that was usually a trend, like everywhere that I've been, like that you're going to win, you're going to lose some recruits. But at the end of the day, like you just want to have a good cycle when you have a signing day, and that's what the staff's going to do. You know, we still have a top 25 class. We'll have a good class, but yeah, it just looked totally different. And I remember even when I was playing in the early 2000s, you know, my class, like, you know, you go in with like 20 some kids, you know, when I graduated, maybe half of them were still there, you know, like there's just a lot of attrition. That was before the portal and NIL.
Yeah. Yeah. It's probably even more so right now, Mike. I think the bottom line is you got to judge it at the end, not now where we get too emotional about a loss here or a win there. That's going to be it for our show. Thank you all for joining us. Make sure you come back next time for more Keystone Kickoff Show.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent, led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students. It's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.